And joining us now on The Debate in Victoria, B.C., Norman Spector, who was, among many other things, the chief of staff to former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney. In Saskatoon, Janice McKinnon, history professor at the University of Saskatchewan and a former cabinet minister in the government of Premier Roy Romano. In Ottawa, Jeffrey Simpson, national affairs columnist with the Globe and Mail. And with us here in studio, Akash Maharaj, former national policy chair of the Liberal Party of Canada. Thanks to all of you for gathering to have this discussion about what Jeffrey Simpson 6 years ago, in a much-discussed book called The Friendly Dictatorship, and I want to start the program by quoting a paragraph from Jeffrey's book of those 6 years ago. The Prime Minister, he wrote, presides over what has been dubbed by observers of the parliamentary system as a, quote, elected dictatorship. The constraints on prime ministerial power are paper tigers. They appear fearsome, but in the real world of politics, the Prime Minister is the Sun King, around whom all revolves and to whom all must pay varying forms of tribute. So, Jeffrey, let's give you the floor to start with and get the thesis out there. What is it about the Canadian prime ministership, systemically, that makes it the most powerful job in the Western world?
If I had to write that again, I'd have to take note of the fact that we're now in a minority government. We hadn't had a minority for quite a while when I wrote that book 6 years ago, and that, at the moment, is the principal constraint on a prime minister's power, because obviously you see certain conservative legislation being amended and mauled in the House of Commons. Having said that, there are very, very few checks on his power in our system. The Senate, of course, which is very vital in other jurisdictions, is appointed here and therefore seldom uses the power that it has. All the cabinet ministers are beholden to the prime minister. There are tremendous constraints on caucus members being independent. We've seen many of them expelled from caucus. A few of them have had their ability to run for their party withdrawn from them. The civil service, of course, is there to serve the prime minister and to speak truth to power, which it sometimes does and sometimes doesn't. The party machinery is pretty much at his beck and call. So there are just fewer checks and balances in our system on a prime minister's power, provided he has a majority in the House of Commons. I'll just add one last thing, Steve. When I got to Ottawa about a half a century ago and Pierre Trudeau was the prime minister, people like me and others used to say, you know, he has way too much power. Look at the Coots and the Davies who were around him, who were manipulating everything. Norman Spector will remember that from time to time those same criticisms were advanced about the way Prime Minister Mulroney ran the show. I wrote a book called The Friendly Dictatorship about Jean Chrétien. All I would say is that these allegations are not new. These observations are not new. However, I do think in my half a century or so of looking at things that Mr. Harper, with that little codicil of the minority, has agglomerated more power to himself than any of the prime ministers I've seen. This is the most centralized administration I've ever seen with regard to the discipline that's imposed on MPs.
Okay, hold that thought, Jeffrey, because we are going to get into more detail in that in the moments to come. But Norman Spector, let me get you to follow up on that. Do you agree with Jeffrey's thesis that the Canadian prime ministership is, in fact, an elected dictatorship?
Well, I mean, it says right in our Constitution that we have a system of government similar in principle to that of the United Kingdom. And I guess the best example is that in both our country and the United Kingdom, the Prime Minister can take the country to war without any vote of the House of Commons. I think what that shows is that institutionally, we are extremely powerful in our first minister. In fact, our prime minister has fewer constraints than the British prime minister. But I would argue that institutionally, Stephen Harper is actually deconcentrating power while he's at the same time concentrating power in the way that Jeffrey has mentioned. Let me give you some examples. First of all, he's restored the system of two national parties, which is the major check and balance in a parliamentary system. When Jeffrey wrote the book, nobody gave conservatives half a hope of restoring that system.
So you're saying the Liberals are a national party today?
The Liberals are a national party.
Not everybody agrees with that, but anyway,
The conservatives are a national. Well, both of them can form government. So the major check in our system is the regular alternation of government. But I'll give you another example. I mean, Jeffrey, in his book, argued for elected senators, which I don't happen to support. But Harper started the process of naming elected senators, which would be a check on his power. Fixed election dates, another reform that I don't agree with, curbs the power of the prime minister. the power of the Parliamentary Committee on Appointments. I mean, I don't remember many occasions where you had a major appointment like Gwyn Morgan turned down by Parliament. So I think that institutionally the irony is that Harper, probably because of his Reform Party background, is deconcentrating some of the excesses of the... Oh, and the most important one, which is allowing a vote on the extension of the mission in Afghanistan. The first time, I mean, traditionally our country has gone to war with no votes of the House of Commons. At the same time, I think that Jeffrey is right. I think that we're seeing a prime minister who has, within the cabinet system, become more primus in the Paris, if you want to put it that way. But I think that that's probably a function of the fact that we're still in an election campaign.
Okay, let's get Janice McKinnon in here. What's your view on this, Janice?
Well, I would say that whether or not power is centralized doesn't depend on the party. It goes right across party lines. It also occurs at the provincial level. I was in the Romano government when it was quite centralized. I was in the same government earlier on when it was decentralized. And I think the two points that I would make is one of the biggest problems about a centralized government is that unelected people are in effect making such fundamentally important decisions. It's the people who advise the premier or the prime minister, the pollsters, the strategists, and they will deal with elected people by saying, look, you know, we have the hard data, we have the polls, we have the focus groups. So, I mean, who are you to have an opinion? You just have your own view out there. And I remember one instance, which I think reflects the devastating problem that that can lead to. It was 1999, the government was thinking of going to an election, the pollsters, the strategists said all the hard data, and the pollsters and strategists stay in the capital city, they don't go out into the ridings, says this is a good time to call an election. Our rural members said, you're crazy, this isn't right, you don't have the nuance, people aren't happy. Of course, the election was called and they all lost their seats. So I think that would be one point. It goes across the piece and it's really a problem because, as I say, the people that the voters elect are not the ones that make the decisions. However, one other caveat I would have, having been in a government that was tightly controlled and one that wasn't, a key factor in the difference is the talent that the First Minister has available to him. And I think one of the issues about the Harper government and one of the reasons that you may want to keep a tight rein on this particular caucus and cabinet is that it's new. I know Jeffrey doesn't like them saying they're the new government, but in terms of people who have government experience, we have Reform members there, former Reform members, who've never been in a government. It's totally new to them. And because the government was not seen to be the winning party, the Conservatives were not seen to be the winning party in 2006, I don't think they have the talent rush that comes to a government party, so they don't have the talent. So I think those are two factors that help to explain some of the impulses to keep a tight rein on it.
I don't want to put words in Jeffrey Simpson's mouth, goodness knows, but I don't think he minded them calling them the new government back in February of 06, but in almost May of 07, it seems, I won't go there. Akash, your turn now.
Well, I think that this is the most centralized government certainly in living memory, but to be fair to Harper, that's largely because he's continuing a trend that began in earnest in the early 70s. Having said that, I can't think of any other prime minister who has taken such dramatic steps without consulting not just without consulting his caucus, but even without consulting relevant cabinet ministers.
Which steps?
For example, deciding that Quebec would be a nation without the agreement, or that his position was that Quebec is a nation within the Federation. The Quebecois are a nation within Canada without consulting his Ministry of Intergovernmental Affairs. For example, going to Afghanistan and with his Minister of Defense, but his Minister of Defense didn't utter a word while he was there. For example, making the decision that his government would break their campaign commitment on income trust without discussing it with the cabinet.
But what about Janice's opinion just stated that you know, when you have a large majority government with a lot of bench strength, you can afford to take one approach, but when you have a minority government with, and I don't know, I'm not saying this is the case, but he may feel this is the case, not that much bench strength, you've got to accumulate more power around the center.
I think it's unedifying for a prime minister to say that effectively he must behave the way he does because he does not have faith in his own ministers. If he does not have faith in his ministers, why should the people of Canada? And more importantly, it's not just a question of a balance of power between individual politicians. If centralization of power just meant that one politician had more power and other politicians had less, I think Canadians could be forgiven for not really caring. The problem is that an over-centralized system thwarts the ability of ordinary Canadians to play a meaningful role in the political process. The greatest guarantor of liberty in a democracy is an engaged and alert population standing between its leaders and the levers of power. If their delegates, MPs, are unable to play that role, then Canadians have been cut out of the political process. And with apologies to Jeffrey, I don't think there is such a thing as a friendly dictatorship. There's such a thing as a dictatorship with a smile, but eventually all dictatorships turn nasty.
Well, you wrote the book, The Friendly Dictatorship, when Jean Chrétien was in power, Jeffrey, but I wonder if you felt, I mean, you obviously have, you were there for Paul Martin, you were there for Brian Mulroney, you were there for John Turner, you were there for Pierre Trudeau. Were they all friendly dictators as well?
I was here for Mackenzie Bowl and some other.
No, you were not there for Mackenzie Bowl.
Yeah, in their own way, the system makes them, you can call them friendly or dictators with a smile. I just think, as we discussed a moment ago, that this has been taken to a bit of an extreme. I think if I had to write the book with the benefit of 6 years of Martin and Harper as prime minister, I think I would say that Chrétien was more of a delegator than I thought at the time, in the sense that he actually did give files to ministers and say, as long as you don't mess these files up, just keep me generally informed of what's going on, you carry on. That really isn't the case with this government, and with Paul Martin, to a fairly well, there was a manic centralization in which he had a finger in every pie and every priority was the most important, and he was running around doing everything in that government, well, along with the clerk of the Privy Council, to a great, great fault. I want to make a point about the media. A reference was made to the fact that this trend started in the 1970s. I don't know when you can put a precise finger on it, but that's not a bad starting point. That's the point at which, after perhaps 10 years, almost everything in Canadian politics from a communications point of view had given itself over to television. And we know many things about television, one of which is that it has a short attention span, notwithstanding this fine program, and that it concentrates largely on one person. It is befuddled by the coverage of issues, and it has great trouble scanning a variety of people. So the television focuses exclusively, or almost exclusively, on the persona of the deeds, the words of the Prime Minister of the day. Let me flip that around. If you're in Parliament, you may want, as the Prime Minister, or you may wish, as the Leader of the Opposition, to deflect attention to other people in your caucus. But the media clamors for the leader. The leader is the person whom the media wants. And if you don't give the media the leader, the chances are you're not going to get that coverage. And I have heard it said by people in the Harper government that one of the reasons why Mr. Harper makes 90% of the announcements in this government, I think this is only a small part of the explanation, with the ministers sort of nodding behind him at photo ops across the country like sort of people at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem, is because they won't get the attention from television to what the government wishes to announce if the Prime Minister himself doesn't make the announcement.
Well, in fact, your newspaper this morning reported something along that line where the Prime Minister of this day essentially handles 90% of the briefs that seem to be on his desk, and he thinks he can handle all of them, but perhaps ought not to. Norman Spector, would you come in and comment on that? Does the media, or do the media rather, have their share of the blame to take for the fact that if, in fact, we have a friendly dictatorship in this country?
Absolutely. I think that you have to look at what's happening in Ottawa today. Look, all governments, to varying degrees, feel that the media are there to trip them up. And to varying degrees, they're right. But I've rarely seen the degree of friction between the Parliamentary Press Gallery and the Prime Minister's office that you have today in Ottawa.
Wasn't it worse in Mulroney's time? Wasn't it worse in Trudeau's time?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Mr. Trudeau intimidated the press gallery, but I don't recall there ever being a boycott of asking the Prime Minister questions. So there's enough fault to go around, but I think the, as usual in these spats, there's enough fault to go around. But I think that we are in a permanent campaign mode. Minority governments lend themselves in that direction. And I think what you're seeing is the Prime Minister not having stopped campaigning and seeking to implement the very same rules on the press that, for example, Paul Martin had in the last election campaign. And I think there's tremendous friction as a result of that. And I think that what we're seeing is the kind of messaging discipline. I think Janice is absolutely right. It's the people, the advisors around, the advertising people, the communications people, the pollsters, and it's all about focusing the message. It has very little to do with government, and certainly not with good government, and it has a lot to do with politics in a media-saturated environment.
Well, let me put that to Janice McKinnon, because, and I'm trying to remember now, you'll forgive me that I can't remember, when the Romano government had its coalition with that handful of liberals, were you still there at that time?
Yes, I was.
You were still there at that time. So we have a
situation. I was.
You lived through that minority government situation of the Romano years. We have a minority government in the federal parliament today. Does that not suggest that the elected dictatorship, quote unquote, or the friendly dictatorship we have in this country, maybe doesn't exist anymore? Maybe when you have minority government, there's enough checks on it that you really can't call it that anymore. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think you still can call it dictatorship, in quotes, because it's how decisions are made within that government. And I want to pick up on something that Jeffrey said. He said that, you know, really under Chrétien, he was more of a decentralist in that he allowed his cabinet ministers to take their files and be accountable for them. And I would agree with that. But I would also say there was one sense in which the Chrétien government was much more dictatorial than this one. As a person who is a member of a cabinet minister in a government in Saskatchewan, which I think has a record of good governance in terms of our structures, I was absolutely horrified to watch the sponsorship data unfold and find out that people from the prime minister's office were dealing not with the deputy ministers, not with the people at the top of the civil service, but walking right into departments and intimidating civil servants. That was a fundamental breach of how our system has to work in terms of how you make decisions. And I would say, because they do some work on federal-provincial fiscal relations with the civil service under this government, I think it's because there's a strong clerk of the Privy Council there, I think there's greater respect for the hierarchy, which has to be respected in the civil service. That is, you're the deputy minister, you give us your advice, we take it or we don't, but we don't meddle way down into the bowels of the civil service.
I think the tragedy of all this is that the question, it's not simply a question that there's been an over-centralization of power. It's that the centralization of power has been used towards no noble purpose. I would argue that an overly centralized system does a disservice to the country, is undemocratic, and all the arguments one would expect of me. But in addition to that, I would say that nevertheless, it is possible that sometimes someone wielding great power can achieve great things. What I find extraordinary about the current government is that despite the fact that it is the most centralized government in recent memory, if at all, they don't seem to be pursuing a great vision of the public good. I mean, Pearson centralized power somewhat, but he pursued an idea of Canada as an architect of the, of
well,
the world
is,
order.
Is that fair to say, or you just disagree with the direction that the current government wants to take the country?
I think the government does not have a coherent narrative. That is, they have a whole series of minor initiatives that they are pursuing in an attempt to appease and placate with an eye towards the next general election. And I think that in addition to that, the dread and fear of losing power in a minority government is being used to squelch what should be dissent within their own caucus.
Well, I do remember Bill Davis once telling me that there's nothing that focuses the mind more than knowing that at 6 o'clock every single day, and in his case for 6 straight years, you could lose power.
Absolutely.
So you will grant them that, right?
I will definitely grant them that. But unfortunately, they have focused their minds not on providing good government, which would earn the trust of Canadians. They have focused their minds on not allowing elements within their caucus to say things which might embarrass them, including saying things like legitimate dissent, which forms part of the natural democratic process.
I can see Jeffrey trying to get it.
I want to, we've been critical of this, and the very phrase, the friendly dictatorship, is a negative. But there's something constructive in this system in the following way. This system can get things done. Now, you look at the American system, for example. At the moment, the Bush administration is finished for a whole variety of reasons, and not much is going to get done. If you look in the European situations where you have coalitions, it's sometimes very hard to make tough decisions and get things done. If you look over the last 10 or 15 years in this country, we actually licked the deficit under Mr. Chrétien and Mr. Martin because we had the Prime Minister's office with a strong Minister of Finance who took charge of a difficult file that had escaped the attention of other governments, and they got it done. Let's look at the moment at climate change. I'm not passing judgment on the wisdom of what the conservatives recommended. When they came into office, they had two lines in their platform about it. Once this issue was grabbed by the Prime Minister's office, as all major issues are with this government, we got action. We've had consistent action for the last 6 months. This program is not about whether it's the right direction, whether there's enough of it, but there's been a lot of action and a lot of direction. So this system, and I could take you chapter and verse through the merits of this system, the problem is that there aren't a sufficient number in majority government circumstances as there are in properly balanced governments.
Okay, Jeffrey, you say that, but you want to quote me chapter and verse of that. I'm going to quote you chapter and verse of my Globe and Mail from this morning. And this is an excerpt from an article about the current controversy over the detainees in Afghanistan.
Right.
Here's the quote. As the controversy grows surrounding reports that Afghan detainees have been tortured, some Tories were left wondering Thursday whether Mr. Harper shouldn't start fading a little more into the background.
Yeah, but you see the problem.
Hang on, I'm not done yet. Hang on a sec. A prime minister who wants to be known for competence shouldn't be the point man, they say, for a story that changes every day. When you take everything on your own, how can you possibly, no matter how brilliant you may be, know the sensitivities of a file, a senior Tory asked? You're bound to make mistakes when you don't have the day-to-day, hour-to-hour, second-to-second knowledge, to which you wanted to say, Jeffrey.
I would never want to interrupt you quoting the Globe and Mail. I apologize. I would simply say that when governments get into a situation where you have different ministers saying different things, or the same minister saying different things, when you're in a kind of mini-crisis mode, there's a need for coordination. There's a need for getting your act together, and it's axiomatic that the only person who can bring order to this is the prime minister and the people around him. We can have an argument this week about whether that's been properly done. I accept the general point in that article, which is that you have to be very careful as the prime minister that you don't overexpose yourself. And indeed, Norman Spector can speak intelligently about this because there were times in the Mulroney government where the prime minister, who liked to talk, who was good in the House of Commons, was jumping up all the time and taking too much of the limelight. And he learned later, I believe, that he ought to curb his instincts and let his ministers deal with secondary files.
Well, in fact, pick up on that if you would, Norman.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, both politically, as Jeffrey suggests, and as Janice suggested in terms of a government modus operandi, the kind of government we're seeing in Ottawa now is it can't endure for very long. Politically, it can't endure too long because the prime minister will take too many hits eventually. And in government terms, it can't endure too long either because elected people don't like getting bossed around by unelected advisors. And, you know, what you hear, everything you hear from Ottawa these days is this is going on to a degree unparalleled in our history, where you have unelected people in the prime minister's office telling ministers what to do.
Did you think you had an elected dictatorship when Mr. Mulroney was prime minister?
Look, our system, as Jeffrey says, concentrates power, and Mr. Krejci has said it himself. You remember the famous open mic at the NATO meeting where he derided the American system for the log rolling and pork barreling.
I got that right here. Let me read this. You brought this up, so let me bring this quote up right here. This was, you've got a very good memory, 10 years ago almost, Jean Chrétien attending a NATO meeting when he spoke candidly to the Belgian PM. He didn't realize the microphone was still on, and here's what he had to say. Roll tape.
He didn't realize it, but while he and his NATO counterparts were waiting for President Clinton to arrive, the microphones were still switched on. After a few jokes about the tardy president, Chrétien, speaking in French, started bashing the U.S. political system. The American system. In your country and in my country, all the politicians would be in jail because they sell their votes. They sell their votes. You want me to vote on NATO? Then you have to vote to build a bridge in my constituency.
Now, Janice, the prime minister of the day was in fact saying that our system, and Jeffrey just said it as well, for all of its faults, it may be a friendly dictatorship, but it does get stuff done. Is that a virtue of
right.
it?
Right.
Is that
right.
a virtue of
and
it?
I don't think it's a virtue, but I would disagree with the comment that nothing has been done that's effective and important in the long term by this government. On the contrary, I think if you look at federal-provincial fiscal relations at the end of the Martin era, they were in chaos. You know, the signing of the deal with Newfoundland, it was a real mess. Now, history books are going to look back at the first year here and say one of their biggest achievements was sorting out that mess. Those transfers are sorted out. Here they are. They go out for these numbers of years. Here are the rules. We're back to a system that makes sense. But I want to pick up on the detainees and how this reveals the problem. You've got a weak minister. I don't think anybody would argue today that Gordon O'Connor is a strong Minister of Defense. The Prime Minister and the people around him have to take those files and they have to manage them. It happens in every government. But then the Prime Minister is the person who's the point person and takes the hits. I think the key for this government is it went into the 2006 election as an opposition party. It will go into the next election as a government party. Can it attract the talent so that the Prime Minister can let go of those reins because he's got a lot of able people who can actually pull their own weight and be responsible for their own files?
I think, though, that that lends itself to a vicious circle. If talented and intelligent people are unlikely to want to take up a role where they see themselves as little more than applauding seals, if a Prime Minister argues, I need to centralize power, I need to take away authority from Cabinet and Parliament because I don't have competent people, he's placing himself in a position where he will never get competent people. And indeed, what we are seeing, I think, is that the checks and balances that we have that are creeping into the system aren't within the federal political process. We're seeing that the opposition, where there is a constructive or sometimes a destructive dialogue, is not between the executive and the legislature. It's between executives and executives, that is, between the Prime Minister and provincial premiers. And while there are some people who think that this is a good thing, and I will agree that there are times when it can yield up benefits, it means, I believe, that ultimately no one is speaking for the national interest. There's a Prime Minister who sees his opposition or sees the people whom he has to accommodate as individual premiers who have rightfully looked to individual provincial concerns. But Canadians expect the national government to govern for the nation. They expect a national opposition and a national government caucus to be able to hold the national executive to account for a national vision of the public good. And that's not happening. And indeed, more broadly still, it's not just that people aren't going into the Conservative Party or the Liberal Party. It's also that more and more Canadians are opting out of the political process
altogether.
There's a sense that if you are an intelligent person, you want to strive in something other than vain, that you will become involved more in NGOs or in alternative forms of political engagement. This means that politics, which still, for all its faults, makes important decisions for us, is being denied the full range of talents of Canadians. But most importantly still, it also means that in a country that is held together not by a common ethnicity, a common language, or accents of history, or the determinism of geography, but instead by a federation of ideals, by a common set of political ideas and ideals, it means that in as much as Canadians are losing faith in the political process, they're losing faith in the national enterprise itself. What would be unfortunate for any other country is a tragedy for us. And I think it does a fundamental disservice not only to our democracy, but to our sense of nationhood, to have power concentrated in the center to the extent that it disenfranchises ordinary Canadians.
Jeffrey Simpson, do you agree with Akash that that's what's happening today in this country?
A little bit of a contradiction, because on the one hand, as I understood the argument, it was that we were decentralizing power too much and we didn't have a national vision anymore. On the other hand, we were centralizing power too much in Ottawa in the hands of the Prime Minister. It's hard to go both ways on that.
Federal power is being centralized, but the national debate is being decentralized.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a warp and a woof that's been going on in Canada since Sir John E. Macdonald and Oliver Mowat had an argument back in the 1880s. That's part of the nature of federalism. There's one other matter, Steve, we haven't touched on, and that is the courts. If you go back before the Charter, the courts were really not an impediment on the friendly dictatorship of the federal government. Regardless of what the role was of the provinces. Now the court, the federal court under the charter, the Supreme Court, and other courts can instruct governments on what to do. They can do the reverse. They can say to governments, you cannot do what you had just intended to do.
Or give them the political cover they crave from time to time.
That's right. This is a new factor in the equation in the last 25 years. I'm not suggesting that it is a substantial, ongoing, omnipresent constraint on a prime minister. But nonetheless, it is a constraint, and we don't have time tonight to go through various cases in which the court imposed obligations on a government of the day that the government would never have wanted to assume, and on the other hand, struck down certain initiatives of the government, or sent back the initiatives, in a sense, to the government and said, please modify these. We can get into a whole debate, which we don't have time for, about whether courts are too activist or not, but nonetheless, this is, I won't call it an impediment, but this is a new factor that any prime minister has to consider.
Okay, there is that, Jeffrey.
Yes.
Go ahead, Norm.
There, too, you see another example of actually Mr. Harper deconcentrating the powers of the prime minister by allowing parliamentary hearings, for example.
Well, that was Mr. Martin who did that for the first time.
On Supreme Court appointments?
Yes. Remember, Mr.
Rothstein.
Rothstein.
Marshall Rothstein's appointment.
But your point is taken.
I thought that was Mr. Harper.
He means it was Mr. Harper who brought the person.
Let me just finish. I think it was Mr. Harper who brought Mr. Rothstein's appointment. And even though it's not subject to a vote as it is in the United States, the very fact that you have to present the candidate in public means that you can't appoint your bagman or you can't appoint some party hack.
Yeah, that started under Mr. Martin and maybe continued under Mr. Harper. And also the interest that the conservatives have in the cut of the jib of the judges before they get appointed is a recognition generally of the point I was making, that they're aware of the role that the judiciary now plays, and they're not as happy about it as the previous liberals were.
But if it is to be meaningful, democracy has to be more than just a way of choosing leaders. It has to be about a way of actually governing ourselves. And while I would agree that it is an improvement that to see the people we choose for positions of responsibility to be under more than just the gift of the sitting prime minister, it is completely insufficient. Indeed, when I look at the United States, they reached the zenith of what they called the imperial presidency under Richard Nixon, and it took the scandal of Watergate to reverse that trend. Today, I think there is massive decentralization of power in the office of the president, which had until the 70s accumulated. I think that in Canada, and indeed in any democracy that allows this much power to be concentrated in so few hands, we are inevitably we're awaiting the moment of correction.
But some would argue it depends who holds the office, the Oval Office, whereas Jeffrey's argument, I think, here is that it's way more systemic. I can see Janice trying to get in on something as well.
Yeah, well, I think we're putting much too much emphasis on this as the only cause of the problems that we have in our democracy. I mean, the cynicism that the public has, the lack of voter turnout, I think there's all kinds of reasons for it. Visit question period. We shouldn't let school children go into question period. Look at some of the actions of the parliamentary committees. Look at the promises that are made. Look at people saying they can implement Kyoto. We know we can't implement Kyoto. Jeffrey Simpson's told us that many times. Other people have. So there's a whole series of reasons why people are disengaged from politics. This could be one factor, but there are many, many others that are much more visible to the average person than who's making the decisions in Ottawa.
We've got just a few minutes left here, and I do want to tackle this before we go. And Jeffrey, I'll get you to start on this. Is there something in the Canadian nature which actually craves is maybe too strong a word, but prefers the friendly dictatorship? We do like our peace order and good government, after all.
Well, there have been lots of books written about the Canadian character, and one element of that character, it used to be said, was a certain degree of deference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we were much more deferential than the Americans. Well, the more contemporary analysis of Canadians is that we've lost a lot of deference. In fact, there was a wonderful book written by a political scientist at the University of Toronto called The Decline of Deference. I'm not sure we are as deferential as we used to be. But I think the nature of the Prime Minister's power, the structures that we built many decades ago, is a reflection of that sense of deference that we had towards power, which was the inheritance that we had from Britain. Norman opened our discussion correctly reminding us that our Constitution says we are inspired by the Westminster model. And the British view of liberty was that the concentration of power in the hands of the Queen's officers was not a threat to liberty, but was the enhancement of liberty, whereas the Americans took the contrary view. And therefore, our system of government bore the imprint of those assumptions about liberty that we inherited from the British, and we have very slowly been chipping away institutionally at those assumptions in the last 30 years.
There wasn't, Norman, a great deal of deference to Mr. Mulroney when he was in power. I do recall that. But what do you think about what Jeffrey just had to say?
Well, I think that's right. I think that, the best example, again, is the way we got into the Afghanistan war. Not only was there no vote in Parliament, but when we extended the mission to Kandahar, there was one newspaper report of the debate. And it led with Africa. So I think that we do have institutional problems. My concern is that we seem to be importing a lot of American institutions or pieces of the system. And I'm not sure we're going to end up with a better system by importing what hasn't worked out all that well there. I tend to think that the British Parliament, the Westminster model of government, is the best model of government in the world.
Last 30 seconds to Akash Maharaj.
I would like to think that we have evolved as a country over the past 200 years or so, and that our institutions will eventually catch up. I think that the concentration of power is out of step with the Canadian character as it stands today. It's contributing to a tyranny of low expectations, and Canadians demand more. The restiveness of the country is proof of that, and the politicians who catch up to that will prosper.
Norman Spector, Janice McKinnon, and Jeffrey Simpson on the line in British Columbia, Saskatchewan, and the nation's capital, respectively. It's good of you to join us for this discussion tonight. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Akash Maharaj here in Toronto. Great having you alongside as well.
Thank you.
For more information on tonight's guests and links to further readings about the friendly dictatorship, please visit our homepage. That's tvo.org/theagenda. Tonight's program was produced by Erica Balch and Alan Eckenberg, and you can read and respond to our Ottawa Bureau Chief's blog post on tonight's debate topic at tvo.org/theagenda as well.